parks, were there any, do you notice any major differences in playing in the National League or the, as opposed to the American League?
No.
Umpiring or?
I didn't notice. I didn't notice any difference.
And we got to touch on the ballpark, Detroit, interesting. How about the Cleveland ballpark? That was a huge park, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great in the early years. When I first came up to the Yankees, they had a good ball club with, you know, Mossy and Narleski and Early Wynn and Woody Held and Tito Francona. They had a good team, and we had some good games. And, you know, when they filled that stadium with 70,000 people sitting there, it was terrific. Then toward the end of my career with the Yankees, Cleveland club was not so strong, and nothing's better than a big ballpark when it's full. Nothing's worse when a big ballpark is empty.
Like playing in
so,
a cave.
Exactly. It was like playing in this open canyon, and it wasn't.
How do you react to all of the fuss that goes on about inside pitches and rhubarbs that the batters drop the bats, throw the bats, come after the pitchers, and all of the ruckuses that they've had the last few years? And, it's never seemed to be the case. 10, 15 years ago, pitchers pitched inside then, and guys got hit, and they, you know, there was not the fighting and the rhubarbs. And the
I think it's probably players are more concerned about their safety today than they were then.
Right. And certainly, you know, the salaries that they earn, and this is a factor too. You know, a guy wants to be able to continue his career.
Well, he's got a lot of people. He's got a lot of people around him. He's got a wife and a corporation and an agent and a publicist and a whole entourage. You know, we just had ourselves and our families.
No, it's just that we weren't seeing as much of this, you know, fighting and rioting, if you want to call it that, or rhubarbs or whatever. You know, it never seemed to be prevalent 10, 15 years ago. It has been the last 2 or 3 years.
Uh-huh.
And a guy, you know, might take 2 or 3 pitches inside, and all of a sudden he feels that he wants to go out to the mound and challenge the pitcher. You know?
Yeah.
It's a tough thing. And yet the pitcher has to protect his plate. You know, he's got to protect his part of the plate.
Yeah.
Got to be able to come in on the hitters if that's the way to get them out.
Yeah, well, listen, throwing a ball on the inside part of the plate or the outside part of the plate and having the ball, you know, not go exactly where you want it and go too far inside or too far outside, that's part of baseball. But I have never had any respect for pitchers who use that as a weapon or who use the high inside fastball as a way to intimidate the batter. Or to keep him from hitting an outside pitch by scaring him and making him think he's going to get hit by an inside pitch.
And also there's a tactic. It would seem to me that some of the hitters, if they have a guy breaking curveballs over the outside of the plate, you can't just have him lean over the plate trying to hit that curveball.
Why not? I mean, he's entitled to stand up there.
No,
I mean,
I know
if he's actually in the strike zone, then he's going to get hit. It's his fault. But
well,
I know
he's going to have to back off.
There were pitchers like Bob Gibson and Don Drysdale who openly acknowledged that fear was a part of their pitching repertoire and that they considered themselves tough guys. I didn't consider them tough guys because they threw high inside to batters. To me, a tough guy is somebody who throws high inside to a batter and then goes outside after the game in the parking lot and lets the batter throw balls at him. That's a tough guy. If a pitcher is out there throwing high inside and then he doesn't come to bat himself, that's not a tough guy. So I didn't think those guys were too tough.
Where are you making your home now, Jim?
Teaneck.
In Teaneck proper?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you made the complete cycle now. You
started
in New York, and you're back in New Jersey again after
New
all
Jersey.
The years, but you got a lot going for you. Was it? I'm just going to wind it up by asking you, there maybe 2 or 3 ball games that you felt are the ones that you'll always carry with you?
I mean, oh, yeah.
You want to zero in on one?
Okay. I guess the first game in my life, the most important game, was in the Legion Ball tournament game. It's like the big game of my life. Pitching the no-hitter in high school. Pitching the 13-inning game that we lost 3-2 for the high school state championship. Beating Cincinnati 2-0 on that Sunday afternoon after my...
The University of Cincinnati.
Cincinnati semi-pro team.
Right.
When I pitched for Cook Sportscraft.
Right.
Beating that Cincinnati team in the National Amateur Baseball Championships in Battle Creek.
Battle Creek, right.
That game. My first start, which was a shutout, the worst shutout in the history of baseball, but it was a lot of fun. Winning my 20th game in 1963. Which also clinched the pennant. It was a pennant-clinching game and my 20th win. Up in Minnesota, I pitched a shutout against the Minnesota Twins with a four-hitter. I beat him 2-0. Camilo Pascual pitched for the Twins. And I found out later, this is why I have mixed feelings about Ralph Houk. I found out later that Ralph Houk had told Johnny Sain late in that season that I was not going to win 20 games. He was going to see to it. Because we had a big lead, and we had like a 10-game lead. And he didn't. He could maneuver the team and the starting rotation. So
why would he say something like that?
Because it was my second year in the big leagues, and it was too soon for me to win 20 games.
That's
so. He told Johnny Sain. He said, I'm going to see to it that he doesn't win 20 games. It's too fast for him. So the night I won my 20th game was in Minnesota, and we clinched the pennant that night. And I looked back at the box score, at the team lineup, because I remember it was a strange lineup. Mantle didn't play. Maris didn't play. Phil Lynns played center field. Blanchard played right field. Hector Lopez, I think, was in left field. It was the strangest lineup, filled with substitutes. But we won 2-0 anyway. We didn't hit the ball out of the infield all the time. I really had good stuff. So I won my 20th game with a lineup that Houk figured we were not going to win the game with that lineup. And then I only had one more start between there and the end of the season. So if he could have arranged, that was the one I won my 21st game. But if he could have jiggled that one around, he could have kept me from winning 20 games.
You also must have, how about your two World Series?
And my two World Series wins against the Cardinals.
Those must have been a four.
Yeah. Well, losing 1-0 to Drysdale in 63 was... That was not bad.
That was a pretty good game.
That was
too,
a good game. I still remember that game. Yeah. But beating the Cardinals, winning my first World Series game, 2-1 with Mantle hitting a home run off of Barney Schultz in the ninth inning, and he said he was going to hit one out. He said, "I'm going to hit a home run off this guy."
That was a good Cardinal team too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, Ken Boyer, Grote, Javier. Yeah, that was a good team.
Well, listen, I've taken up enough of your time, and I am appreciative of.
Listen, I've enjoyed the conversation. And wonderful questions. I like reliving the old days.
It was fun.
Yeah.
And
I had a good time.
On behalf of the Sabre people, I thank you very much. And this will go on record. When I make the extra copies of the tape, I'll see what you get. I'll drop them off here for you.
Sorry I had a cold here.
No. I think you came across fine. I just want to... At this point... on the evening of March 19th, I'm leaving Jim Bouton's office, and this is the end of our interview.